Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an inside and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode, I thought it was 119, but it's 120.
120.
Am I correct?
You are correct.
120 is being brought to you once again by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So we're once again in beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia, nearing the end of summer. Is that correct?
I would think we had this conversation before. So summer like ends like September 22nd or 23rd. Started in June, will end in September, but yes, all the fall decorations are out, plenty of Halloween things are out.
We have had a mild summer by Georgia standards.
Absolutely.
My sprinklers have not come on for the lawn at all.
Well,
and I think the
how does
grass,
that have anything to do with the...
Well, because of the heat. It's not. It's been hot, but not super hot. We've not had a drought. We've had plenty of rain.
So your sprinkler system detects... the rainwater, or
well,
this is you setting it?
I set it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
there are sensors. I'm not smart enough to figure out how to install one and make that happen, but there are systems that do that.
Okay.
But yeah.
Cool.
So anyway, I just think it's been mild, which always concerns me when things are going really well, then something bad's going to happen.
Yeah. Are we going to have like a terrible tornado season or like a really cold winter? Who knows?
Something, yeah.
Maybe
so,
it will continue to be status quo. Who knows?
Hurricane season we had, was it Fred? Was that the name of the hurricane that hit the coast?
The most
last
recent,
week?
Yeah, I think so.
And we had quite a bit of rain and clouds, the outer swells or whatever they call that. Had a little bit of tornado activity, but nothing touched down.
We did have some
that was last week.
Flooding, right?
Yep.
On 285.
Yep, a couple days ago.
Yeah, remember when we were talking about Michigan flooding months ago? We had a similar situation here on 285. I think all is well now.
So this is probably going to be just random podcast, like most of them are, but my mind immediately goes to now. So pause, back up. Years ago, I would be driving on 285, which is the interstate loop around Atlanta, and we would have a downpour, whether it's during the day or at night, and people in the area would actually, or many people driving, would actually put their hazards on so that everybody could see them and they wouldn't be hit. Well, now, every time we're
it sprinkles
around that type of event, the news stations are like, please, number one, I think it's illegal, actually, to put your hazards on, but do not do that. That's the worst thing you can do. And the reason is because those around you are blinded by your hazards going off. We can't see what the heck is going on.
Yeah, so you need to have your lights on, so
yep.
Your taillights and your headlights. But yeah, there's no need to have your hazards on. And I don't know where that started from as well, but it definitely, every time it sprinkles around here, people slow down to basically 20 miles an hour and put their flashers on.
It might be people transplanted from the north. I'm going to just venture a guess that maybe
wow.
have moved down here and aren't used to this.
You have an opinion about those northern
folks,
those Yanks, huh?
Yeah. So anyway, so that's kind of, I guess, the local weather update.
Dr. Reese, going back to the weather rock, she mentioned to me a couple days ago in the middle of treatment, she walked up to me and she said, this just in, the weather rock is quite wet.
Oh, wow.
In such a tone. She's so funny.
It has been
someone nearby was like, what is she talking about? And I'm like, well, the rock outside's wet. What does that mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny.
They weren't on the inside joke.
Yeah,
but
not at all.
It has been a crazy week of weather this past week. I think at like 4 o'clock on Friday, I looked out one of our surgery windows. We were fortunate at the Russell Ridge location to have a lot of natural light coming into the practice. And we've got a lot of glass front stores, or not glass front stores, glass
doors.
Doors and storefronts.
Similar
frontage
to like
types.
You would see storefronts.
Yeah, in our surgery suite. So you can kind of see through the entire practice. But I looked up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock and it was completely black outside.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. What? And I kind of made the comment, oh, are we about to have a tornado hit? And I panicked like half of the staff.
So, do you remember maybe months back that they were talking about not doing the daylight savings time here in Georgia? Do you know if that ever passed or
I've not
not?
heard anything more beyond what we were talking about.
Okay, so that whole like dark at 4 o'clock thing, everyone, I heard from multiple people in the practice how surprised they were that it was dark outside. But on the flip side of that, I'm like, this is what it's like every December.
Yeah.
Like
It
always,
just
it's
eases into it,
dark
though, right? It's
outside
that
at
slow
four or five.
transition.
Yeah, I
So
guess.
that's a great segue into a topic I did not plan on talking about. Whether it's a tumor or your sick pet or your pet losing weight or gaining weight, or just any really conditional change, as a pet owner, when you're around your pet every day, day in, day out, these types of trends are very hard to
To
note.
pick up on, yeah, for sure.
So, and we've somewhat talked about this in the past. So, one of the reasons I'm bringing this up is I had a patient recently come in who I had seen 3 months ago. And this particular patient, we had done a surgery on, and he just had not been eating very well. And the owner was concerned. We'd had a couple of conversations, and I finally, made the strong recommendation, like, we need to look at this pet and see what in the world is going on. Probably needed some blood work, but let's start by doing a physical exam. And when he came into the practice this past week, I didn't even recognize the dog. He was so underweight, had lost so much muscle mass, that I told the owner, I'm like, I don't recognize him. There is a lot going on. You know that he has not been doing well, but you've not picked up on how much muscle and weight he has lost. And she's like, oh yeah, you're right. So, point of this whole discussion, I guess, is as a pet owner, if you are kind of suspicious or you have a gut feeling or you're just worried about something, probably needs to go to the veterinarian, right? The pet.
Absolutely, always.
We always say that, but if you are concerned, come in, and it's either going to be a real concern or it's not. And if it's not, no harm, no foul.
Right, no
But
judgments ever.
it's like living with your kids, right? So, I'll kind of make this a little bit personal. So Jared, my middle kid, just moved him to Georgia this past week. He's starting at UGA as a freshman, living on campus as all are required to do. Super happy, super proud, but super kind of emotional about that. It's really hard whenever you move one of your kids out for whatever reason, I think.
Are you getting emotional? Did I hear just a crackle in your voice just now?
No, that I was just catching my breath. So I didn't necessarily go back and look at photo albums, but on my phone, like on your phone, so I didn't, what I'm saying is I am still and was emotional about that, as was my spouse, not our entire family, because Hannah really misses him. Asher probably doesn't really care, but I just got to thinking, and kind of reminiscing, and then all of a sudden, within 24 hours, the picture memories popped up on my phone. And there were several of him when he was like 3 or 4 years old. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Number one, he is still a cute kid, but he was so cute and such a little butterball. But the transformation from him as a person, not only in the way he looks, but in his height, all of these things, right? His whole growth through this process compared to where he is now, you forget about that because it's such a slow transformation day to day. And so it's exactly the same thing with a pet that maybe only comes to the vet once a year, or in this case that I was kind of talking about, 3 months ago, you don't really realize how quickly they change right before your eyes because you're with them every day. And so once again, if there's any inkling as a pet owning parent that maybe something's awry, I would get another set of eyes and ears, and the best source of those eyes and ears are your local veterinarian.
So where I thought you were going to go with this is that if you don't measure it, you can't track it. I thought you were going to take it back to like
That is partly
business.
true.
But it's the same kind of thing, right? So like take weight,
Weight loss, perfect
body
example.
condition score, heart murmurs, any of these things with pets, right? Kidney disease, liver disease. We might have known it was a problem or whatever, but if you're not tracking it and monitoring it, then you're never aware of the changes.
Right.
And so that's where I thought you were going to go with that. But I
Well, no,
think to your
yeah.
point, it both of them apply and coincide with each
other. Gradual changes. Definitely, if you're serious about having your pet lose weight, number one, go on a weight loss diet.
Not maintenance.
Not maintenance. Not a fitting this or a lean that. Go work with your local veterinarian and go on a weight loss diet, and then hold your pet and yourself accountable by weighing the pet every week, period. And that way you can see the trends. Same thing with yourself, right? If you really want to lose weight, go on a weight loss diet and then weigh yourself daily would be my suggestion. Not to be, what's the word?
I don't know, giving out human medical advice? I don't know.
No, I'm fine with doing that. But not to be, paying attention too much, but I do think...
Don't stress yourself out, yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's our Healthy Pet, Happy Life segment.
Healthy Pet, Happy Life. Just circling back to the whole daylight savings bill. So apparently in March, the Georgia House passed a permanent daylight savings time bill, but I think it's now in Congress, and so I don't know that come November if we will or won't change our clocks.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. All right, so a couple of stories. Texas Tech University just opened their vet school, which we talked about this within the first 10 episodes of our podcast when we started doing it. So if you want to go back to episodes 1 through 10 and look for that,
yeah, we talked about all of the new vet schools that were opening because we needed more veterinarians in the world, more so rural. How do you say that?
Okay. Pause. That's a very hard word for me.
Gosh.
Because
okay.
I'm rural myself. And so rural. If you're from West Texas, you say rural.
Okay.
Like rural. But
we're going to call them country. Okay. Country vets.
So anyway, if you're in a country setting, also known as rural, okay. We completely went left field here.
No, you did. So,
all right, so
we talked about all the new vet schools that were opening.
So there's
back
New York.
Yes.
Right outside of Manhattan. Long Island, I think, is where it was. We talked about Chandler, Arizona was one of the newest ones, but this is like 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
So Texas Tech University is in Lubbock, Texas, which is extremely close to where I grew up and I'm from. I'm from Ropesville.
So many of your family members, siblings or whatnot, went to Texas Tech U, right?
My dad did. One of my brothers did, yes.
Okay. I thought it was more than that. But
So that definitely is the local school. And so Texas Tech University School of Veterinary Medicine, TTU for Texas Tech University, and then SVM. So I just kind of found that odd that that's what they named themselves, but they are distinguishing themselves from Texas Tech in Lubbock because this particular college or university technically is in or outside of Canyon, Texas, which there is a West Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
So not Texas A&M and Bryan College Station. It's called Bryan College Station because it literally sits in College Station, but the city of Bryan is right there next to it. And so Texas Tech University School of Veterinary Medicine is in Canyon, Texas. And the reason we're talking about them is because they opened up and received their first year class just this week.
Yes.
This past week. And so I didn't think about this, but how weird to be the first class in a vet school. There's no second, third, or fourth years ahead of you.
Yeah.
Like, you're the only ones there. And then next year, it's going to be even weirder because now you're the quote-unquote senior class as a second-year student, and there's first year. So, just weird, I'm thinking. But the whole reason this school came to be, in my understanding, is because in Texas, there was felt to be not only a shortage of veterinarians, especially recently, but mainly large animal or mixed animal veterinarians to service the needs of the clientele and farms in Texas. And so I'm a great example of that. I grew up on a farm in Texas. I thought I was going to be either a horse veterinarian or a large animal or at least a mixed animal vet, which I was for the first 2 years of my career. But now I've moved out of Texas. I live in Georgia, and I'm small animal only. And so this particular school, one of the big purposes, which Texas A&M was not really keen on having another vet school come into Texas, but the big purpose was to service like the feedlot industry, all of these farmers, these livestock raisers, because the trend was for vets to move away from that as a career. And so I understood all that. I knew all this, but they threw a little bit of a loop in this news article that came out that the fourth year, or typically the clinical year at TTU SVM, is completely not done at the university.
So do you know why, right? So like the article says, so they want more students to become veterinarians. So we've also talked on this podcast many a times that veterinarians or vet students are graduating with
Huge student
astounding amounts of
debt.
debt.
Yeah, it's a
And
death,
so you did say death, but
sorry.
debt. And so one of the things with the rural or
Rural.
the regional veterinarians, large animal, that kind of thing, is that students aren't, if they're graduating with so much debt, they're not going to go into a job in those areas
So
and
historically have paid
earn
less
a ton
than
of
small
money.
animal only
Right.
or
So
specialty,
this
yep.
university is now, they did not build out a teaching hospital, is my understanding, which is why these fourth year students are going to spend their final year of
Right,
vet school
outside of the class, outside of the university, at
out in the
another location.
field,
So
essentially.
you and I have experience with that through our local
Technician program.
technician technology program. It tends to be a product of not only the teachers and courses being taught, but also the clinical sites that these
Of
students
course.
go to.
Right.
We also have experience. We currently have Graham, last name not mentioned on purpose, with us for a month, who's doing one of his clinical rotations with us here. He's from North Carolina, so he's doing a rotation with us here in Georgia.
So he comes from a program very similar to this, but not
Extreme,
necessarily meant for the same reason.
extremely similar. So yeah, that's where the depth of the story gets very interesting. So he goes to Lincoln Memorial in Tennessee, LMU. And very similar kind of a concept, right? They're going to their first 3 years of classwork, but we're not going to have a teaching hospital. The facility, the animals, the teachers slash professors. So huge money savings. I don't know what it costs to go to LMU. I need to ask him that. Huge money savings for the university and the
The
student,
student,
which
for
is
sure.
good,
Right.
win-win.
Well, same with Texas Tech U, which is what is happening here.
Texas Tech U SVM.
SVM, yes. So without a
But
teaching hospital, it makes it way more affordable to go to school there.
the student, whether it's a vet student, a tech student, or another student, I guess, is a product of that clinical experience or where they are, which
So.
is good and bad. So they have safeguards in place. They recommend what you teach the students, whether it's, again,
Right.
technician or DVM candidate. There are certain requirements they have to meet. Like the other night, Graham at 5:30 had to kind of duck out of clinics because he had an hour-long presentation he had to go
Zoom
watch. So
presentation, of course, yeah.
I'm not saying it's
So,
bad or great. I'm just saying it's different.
but I have a question. So, I went to a tech program in Michigan where we had more of like a mock hospital. We had a surgical suite on site. We had dogs and cats boarding in our facility. We had lab animal there. So like we basically were a hospital, if you will, but it wasn't a teaching hospital, but we did have veterinarians there. We did surgery,
Had vets
all of
come in
these
and do it on
things.
site, though.
And our professors did it
Yeah.
there as well, right? So we learned everything kind of the ideal way as you would from a textbook, similar to students like you who went to more of a traditional veterinary school, right? So you learn these ideal ways from a teaching hospital. Do you think students like those coming from Gwinnett Tech, our technician program locally, or LMU or Texas Tech University SVU, SVM, are they at a disadvantage or an advantage?
Depends on the student
And the programs that they go
and the
to.
programs they go the
So
well yeah the
the
clinical
clinics that
sites
they
they
go
go
to.
to. Absolutely. So some
So,
students are going to thrive and they're going to save money and it's going to work out perfectly. Others are going to fail,
yeah.
and then there's going to be probably 50% that are in the middle.
Yes. So the sites that these students are going to are volunteer based, right? Yeah. And so typically they have...
What do you mean volunteer-based?
So it's not like they're getting paid from the college to take a student on. It's volunteer-based. And so you have to have the right type of person teaching these students now, but they're not professors. They have no formal education to teach other people. So the one thing about the article that we read about TTU-SVM is that majority of their sites are going to be AHA accredited.
Many. They're excited that, quote unquote, many are AHA accredited. So my little spin on the article is because this is so much based on the needs in Texas, I would almost guarantee you if I contacted TTU-SVM and said, we are an AHA hospital in Lawrenceville, Georgia. I would love to welcome students from Texas to come extern here or get their clinical
clinicals done.
I think there's an extremely high chance they would say, no, only Texas. But you know what? We'll put you on the wait list. If the student can't get a Texas rotation because the school has been built on the foundation of helping to relieve the needs of Texas veterinary positions, you know, if we have to, yeah, we'll send them to you, but we really want them to go to Texas.
So, and the students that go here have obviously they're going to have an ideal job when they get out, right? That they're going to want to be a large animal vet, traveling, that kind of thing.
Yep.
But they're not going to teach only large animal, right? So, like, you could go here and let's say it's the only vet school you could get into because it's the first year and they're a little lenient on their program admissions,
right?
You could graduate and be a small animal veterinarian out of this program.
Well, I think you could. There may be incentives that they put in place, but the article clearly states that the school's focus is squarely on general veterinary practice in rural and regional communities.
Okay. So yes, you do learn small animal.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just interesting. I'm not bashing them.
No,
but
not at all.
They're trying.
There's a total need.
Yeah, there is definitely a need for veterinarians, period.
Right.
And so I just think it's interesting. And because when I read that, AHA Hospital's like, wouldn't that be cool? Like we could kind of partner up with them and we could get some students here. We could mentor and teach and train.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I still will reach out, actually.
Okay, good for
because
you.
It's going to be... You know, they're just starting their first year students. And again, until we started talking about it, I'm like, there's no fourth years, there's no third years, no second years.
Yeah.
It's only first years.
Yep.
So, and I guess kind of thinking back like to the Arizona school, I think maybe last year their fourth year class did graduate. I feel like we talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they finally produced, they finally, quote unquote, made a vet. The reason I say that is early on, when I got out of vet school, I would go back home and I'd be talking to people I knew or maybe some people in the area that I didn't really know that well. And, you know, hey, what are you doing? What do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a veterinarian. You'd say, I'm a vet. And they'd be like, oh, you Army, Marine? No, I'm sorry. I'm a veterinarian. What do you got to do to make a vet? And I'm like, excuse me? And they're like, yeah, what you got to do? And they meant school-wise, right? And so many people, at least from where I grew up, had no idea that you had to have a formal education and, you know, be kind of postgraduate education. So
Right. That's
what it takes to make a vet. So, Afghanistan.
Yeah. So, I am not politically driven by any means, but, there was an article this morning that came through my email and the title of the article said female veterinarians in Afghanistan tell their stories. And I thought that was interesting because I am probably the first to admit that I am not culturally sound when it comes to these things. And I honestly would have never really thought that over in Afghanistan, that they're normal cities just like us and that they have veterinarians and whatever. Well, the reason is because before when the Taliban ruled them, they weren't. And now the fear is not that the Taliban is coming back in and kind of taking things over. They're probably not going to be the same again. But there is a picture here of a female veterinarian holding a cat, and she is the only female veterinarian with a registered pet clinic in Afghanistan. So she is also the vice president and the head veterinarian of a small animal rescue in the area. And basically the story goes on to say about how she has been somewhat hiding out in her veterinary practice, because she is afraid of the ramifications Taliban. That the Taliban will have on her being a female, not currently having Taliban, approved wear, and working. So according to the Taliban, females need to have a specific dress and they're not allowed to work.
She also partnered up with an American driven non-profit type of pet rescue organization, so which is definitely frowned upon.
Yeah, so they call it NGO or non-government organization or something like that. And so there's actually two female veterinarians that the article talks about, but it's exactly the same thing about how that the Taliban is coming back in and there's many pets that are being abandoned because people are just leaving their homes. And so there's lots of pets, not only people are they trying to get out of Afghanistan right now, but they're also trying to get these pets out. And so this veterinarian, this rescue group, and then there's another veterinarian that joined up with a French immigrant with another rescue group, and they're also trying to get somewhere around like 100,000 people or pets out of, or 120, not 100,000 people and pets out of the country for their own safety. I just thought that was so
I'll chime in.
Scary.
Yeah. So number one, I meant to ask our Covetrus rep, Alan, about his thoughts about what's going on in Afghanistan, because as you remember, if you don't, I'll refresh your memory. He was a member of the National Guard, maybe still is. Mm-hmm. He went over to Afghanistan early on during or shortly after Desert Storm. So he spent a couple of years over there. Did you remember that?
Yes.
And so I was going to get his opinion. He was in the other day and I simply forgot, but I'm somewhat embarrassed to admit that I didn't really realize there were really pets, if you will, over in Afghanistan, and certainly not veterinarians.
So that's the same thing. That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like I'm the first to admit that I'm not like I'm not that cultural, but at the same rate, like when the Taliban was ruling, so they have what is called Islamic law. And again, I am not at all
Sharia
like a
or something like
I'm
that.
I'm not at all like a culture study, like I social studies and all those kinds of things are just not my thing. But Islamic law basically it forbid television, music, it banned women from working, prohibited girls from going to school after they hit the age of 12.
Huh.
So those kinds of things, like no wonder we didn't think that there were pets or whatever. You're not allowed, the Taliban doesn't want you to have a dog as a pet. So I don't know. I just, gosh, it just seems so scary to think about like that there's this government group that's coming in and just going to completely change your life. I think that's what us as Americans have been feeling like with this whole COVID thing, right? Like they think that if they get the vaccine, because the government said to, now suddenly they can just control everything. So how scary is it that it's like truly not, I'm not relating that back to COVID, but I think that that's the mentality of it.
I don't understand the government. You're kind of saying government, which I'm thinking Taliban is a faction, but yet they are quote unquote governing and dictating. And so it's very weird. And I, you know, I'm actually happy that I don't need to know more than I know about that, but it was very interesting. That article talked about getting, you know, these people out, getting pets out.
Mm-hmm.
So my mind immediately went to, okay, great. We're going to have 100,000 pets from Afghanistan hit the U.S. and maybe, maybe 10,000 hit Georgia. What kind of disease are they going to, disease or diseases are they going to introduce into our area?
Yeah.
Potentially something.
Of course. Anytime you get these huge waves of people or pets kind of coming from other countries, you're always going to get things.
But the couple of people that were interviewed for this article, and I'm not trying to take up for the Taliban, but the tone that I got at the end of the article was, since the Taliban has come back in and quote unquote taken over, it's different. They are not gunning down females in the street. They're kind of toned down is what it sounds like. And again, I don't know.
I feel like the fear structure is still there, and maybe right now
I think the fear is very real.
Yeah, I feel like maybe they're not, but I think that that's what everyone is anticipating, and maybe for whatever reason they are taking it slow. But there's a statement here that the Taliban has pledged this time in respect to respect the rights of women within the framework of Islamic law, but their future is uncertain. So they say like, oh yeah, we'll respect women, but according to our Islamic law, which if you go back to what I said earlier, says that they're not allowed to work, they have to dress a specific way and whatever. So to your point, like maybe they're easing in right now because I don't know, maybe they're afraid of other countries like the United States who we used to basically stay there and we pulled out, and then this is what's happening. So
it's a mess. It's a mess.
It's
but...
kind of a hot mess. But my point being is, like, taking it back to the animals, just, I don't know. The fact that the government, Taliban, right? I'm going to call it the government, but the Taliban says, like, dog ownership is not allowed. That's so bizarre to me. And I guess that is what people keep calling this, like, privilege, right? Like, because I'm a United States citizen, like, I have never had to think about anything
so
like that.
For all
that's
the
so
problems
crazy.
We have, right? We have a ton of liberties.
Yeah.
And yeah, to live in fear, like, can you imagine we're in Lawrenceville, Georgia, and all of a sudden the troops pull out and we're afraid of, you know, the big bad boogeyman coming in and killing us, telling us what we can and can't do and completely, you know, taking over. We have a lot of bad stuff going on, we think.
Yeah, of course.
With everything from coronavirus to what's going on socially, you know, we could kind of look back at the last 18 to 24 months, but all in all, we're in a pretty good place, pretty good place
to live.
No,
I would agree.
So, last thing I have real quick, cryptorchidism.
Okay.
Is the word of the day. So let's break it down. Crypt is Greek for, what's the meaning of the Greek?
Hidden? I don't know.
Yeah. Hidden. Exactly. Tales from the crypt. Is there any other?
Cryptococcus.
Crypt in the hood. Crypt in the, it's different crypt. And then orchis.
Is a flower.
Not orchid. Orchis means testicle. I don't really know why it does, but that's the meaning. And so
an anatomical
hidden testicle.
Flowering.
So I pulled up just to kind of find the I forget. Dr. Reese always tells me what it means when you break down words and where they come from. It always skips my mind, but cryptorchidism in people is, let me find it. Is the most common congenital defect of the urogenital system in people. Cryptorchidism.
So that's interesting. Do they, maybe this is bizarre, but do they descend the testicle? Or do you know what I'm saying? Like, so like,
well,
if
no,
it's,
I mean, it's hidden. So, all right,
if
so
it's
let's
in
back
the
up.
Inguinal canal, like,
so,
do they force it through?
So we see two types of cryptorchidism. We see abdominal, so the testicle is still within the abdominal cavity, or we see inguinal in the groin area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the gubernaculum is the little muscle that attaches to the back of the scrotum and to the testicle. And as you develop as a male child, it pulls your testicle through, from the abdomen, through the inguinal canal, into the scrotum.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, or a dog or a cat or a horse or a fill in the blank. And so, I don't know. I just thought about 3% of full-term and 30% of premature infant boys are born with at least one undescended testicle. That says born.
So does it descend, though?
Many do.
Or do they...
Many do after the fact,
or
yes.
Do they help it descend?
Yes. Well, no, they will, just like in pets. We'll see, you know, some not present, some testicles not present in the scrotum at 6 months of age, but maybe at 12, 6 weeks of age, and maybe at 12, 16, 18 weeks, we find the testicle
so
there.
So for pets, if they have an undescended testicle, we usually consider that not good breeding quality. Right?
Correct. It is a defect.
And so likely they are recommended to be neutered or castrated.
Yes.
And so we do remove the descended, and then we go and find the cryptorchid.
Find the retained or cryptorchid testicle, because usually they typically become cancerous later on in life due to the body temperature, which is one of the
We don't need to get into this.
The temperature of a testicle in the scrotum is different than in the abdominal cavity. The higher temperature in the abdominal cavity is thought to be the main reason a retained abdominal testicle becomes cancerous
in pets.
And we've seen that.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Which is kind of where I was going with people. Like if you're born with an undescended or a retained testicle. Do they monitor it until you're like 8, 9, 10, 12, 16 years old?
Do they go looking for it or not?
And then they need to go find it, or do they remove it?
I don't know. So that's
super interesting.
That's monorchidism, right? One testicle, the other is not there. But I would think you would want to look for it via CT scan, ultrasound,
interesting.
Something.
For pets, typically we can find them, right? So if they're inguinal, like we did on this cat on Friday.
Yep, so Graham, our extern Graham, he assisted me, and I kind of let him have the glory moment of, you know, resecting retrieving the cryptorchid testicles. So,
which was in the inguinal.
It was in this 2-pound cat. Yeah. It was very difficult to find. So, So anyway, all right, that's all I've got. You got anything else?
I think that's it. What an interesting podcast. I hope everyone enjoys this. Definitely, I am thinking about the people in Afghanistan more and more every day. So, I guess my thoughts are with all of everyone over there.
Agreed.
Please check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to our podcast. If you aren't sure where to get it or don't know where to tell your friends to listen, you can always get it on our website at mygavet.com. And while you're there, check out our blogs. Some of our blogs, as we said before, are doing really well, like that most protective dog breed.
Yep.
And then lastly, remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.